Even the Barbie doll has gotten the message about body image. Women generally do not have hourglass shapes, and so Mattel recently put out new versions of Barbie with a fuller figure. We do get hung up on body image in our country, if you hadn't noticed. You only need to stand at the checkout line at the market to notice all those tabloid headlines about who does not have a good beach body. You know, they blank out the face and say, guess who? Our next guest does not make anybody guess. Jess Baker is right up front about her body. She calls herself a fat chick, among other things, on her blog, The Militant Baker. She speaks today at 2 at the Main Library in Medford, brought in by Rogue Community College. She's in the studio with me now. Jess Baker, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
This is quite a description, a fiery body advocate, fat model, mental health professional, self-love enthusiast, professional rabble-rouser, crazy cat lady, TEDx speaker, a for real book author, feminist, and total pain in the, and I'll leave it there.
Well, I am nothing if not thorough.
What got you started down this path?
Oh, it was an accident. I was blogging about something really irrelevant, stumbled across another blog that was a woman who looked a lot like me, had a lot of the same interests, and she was fat. And at the time, I was in denial about my body, and so I was kind of like horrified. But I kept going back because I was also interested. And eventually, you know, one night I had this moment, and I'm sad it was a moment. But I thought, oh my God, maybe I don't have to hate myself for the rest of my life because this person isn't doing that at all. And that came at 26. It's really too bad it took that long. But then I started blogging about it, and here we are a few years later.
26 years, maybe you don't have to hate yourself, you said. So, I mean, did you hate yourself?
Oh, absolutely, for my entire life. And I think that's not uncommon.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I struggled with diets and stuff through your teen years, all that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just like everyone else, feeling like, you know, I've never been thin my entire life, feeling like that was letting that hold me back from doing really whatever I wanted, and it affected relationships, feeling unlovable, unworthy. It just affects every part of your life when you live feeling like you're inferior.
We seem to have a pretty narrow zone when you get right down to it, in the sense that if you're too skinny, people think, oh, you know, anorexia, that sort of thing. If you're too large, oh, boy, you know, health problems, all that sort of thing. I mean, do we have a pretty narrow slot for bodies to fit in, and particularly women's bodies in America?
Yeah, you know, so it does affect everyone, but historically women have been the target of a lot of body image shame, and it's always been exclusive. That's how the money is made. It's not meant to be inclusive. Contentment does not make a lot of money. So it is. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the smaller bodies and the larger bodies. Right now we're so obsessed with health. And so we are, you know, and France is banning bodies of a skeletal nature from the runway. And then here in America, we're diagnosing people just by looking at them and saying, if you're fat, you're unhealthy. We have this obsession with the middle, which is also really unattainable for a lot of people.
That's a really interesting statement you made a minute ago, that contentment does not make a lot of money, that if we're happy with ourselves, we're not going to go buy stuff then, are we? Is that the
yeah.
root of it, you think?
I think if everybody embraced who they were as they are, I think a lot of businesses would go out of business.
Speaking of businesses, you had a fairly publicized touch-up against Abercrombie & Fitch, is that right?
Yes. That's actually probably why we're here.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, a few years ago, some comments from the CEO of Abercrombie resurfaced from 2006, and essentially he just said, you know, we don't sell extra-large clothing to women in our stores because we only sell to the cool kids. And so just really eliminating fat women, again, from being accepted. And I didn't really give a lot of cares. I'm trying to censor myself on air about
yeah,
that was really
yeah,
hard.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Thank you.
I didn't care very much about this, but my readers did, and they kept sending me, you know, they were really upset about it. And so I said, okay, well, what's the best way to, you know, kind of do a comeback to this? And the answer for me was, I will recreate an Abercrombie ad series, but with a fat woman, me, and a traditionally attractive looking Abercrombie type model. And so the juxtaposition of the fat body and the traditionally attractive body just like broke people's minds. They loved it. They hated it. It was in every country across the world. It was just really interesting. And I think the most important part is that this campaign did not do this, but the reason it was so successful is because people were so upset about it. And so we started to see this this mass exodus from Abercrombie stores because people were just so upset about the exclusion. And so I think that this Abercrombie example is really incredible because it shows the power of the people and the power of consumers. And when we say no, you know, companies fall, companies that have been around for decades.
Are you surprised at the way some people responded to that? I mean, people of all body types, it sounds like, responded.
Yeah. Well, you know, my generation, I'm 29, my generation and the generations surrounding it, we are starting to see this shift into demanding more diversity and inclusion. It's kind of cool. You see social justice a lot online and social media. And so I think we're starting to realize, all of us, that there's a little bit more to this conversation than we've had before. So I'm not surprised, but I am excited because I think we're going to continue that conversation.
Jess Baker is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Call her the militant Baker. Call her a fat chick. She uses the term herself. She'll be speaking at Rogue Community College 2 to 4, actually at the Jackson County Library, brought in by Rogue Community College. That's the Jackson County Library headquarters in Medford. Join us now on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about body image and body image issues in America. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You really have reclaimed the term fat. I mean, this is the term that a lot of people just don't use anymore, and yet you're fine with it.
Yeah, fat is not inherently a negative word. It's just a descriptor of size. So I like to say the clouds are fluffy, my shoes are black, Bob Saget's tall, I'm fat. It's all the same thing. And once you take away the negativity in that word, it can't be used against you. And yeah, I am. I'm fat. It's just the way it is.
But is that the kind of thing, like with the, and I'll have to call it the N-word, where people who have it can say it and people who don't can't?
I think at this point in time, I don't ever go out and call someone else fat because we as a culture have not reclaimed that word. I'm working on it. But that still could be triggering for a lot of people, really insulting, and I don't ever want to bring up those feelings in people. So no, I don't call other people fat unless they identify themselves.
Is it any better for a larger person when the response is based on, gee, but I'm concerned about your health, that sort of thing? Does that make any difference in the response that large people get from other people?
I think that's the number one response people get from everyone, because we've all been handed a deputy badge that says you are officially a visual doctor and you can diagnose anyone anywhere at any time. All of you U.S. citizens. And so this becomes really problematic, though, because we're starting to do a lot of research and realize that weight is not the number one determinant of health. So looking at someone, you cannot diagnose them. You know, being fat is not an assurance of illness, and being thin is not an assurance of good health. And I think that really challenges the paradigm we have where it says fat is bad and thin is good. So it's really, this is the final frontier of size issues, is getting past this obsession with health, because right now we connect health with worth. Your value as a person is very much determined by your quote unquote health. And so that is definitely something that I do speak about a lot.
I saw a video from your website that laid a bunch of things out. You know, fat people run marathons, it said, you know, and it listed all the things that fat people do was the tagline there. And it's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, that was a trailer for my book. And the book is called Things No One Will Tell Fat Girls. And mm-hmm. when I was trying to figure out exactly how to encapsulate that in a video, it was, you know, fat girls can and they do. And we're really not limited by size the way we're taught we are. So, yeah, I just wanted to show visual representations of fat women doing things that we've been told we can't, because we do all the time.
See, you mentioned that things kind of broke over you by age 26, but it's, you know, this is the kind of thing you probably dealt with your whole life. I mean, was it beginning to crystallize at some point along the way? Like, wow, we really are hard on people with large bodies in our society.
Until I had that moment of maybe I don't have to hate this myself for the rest of my life, I was thoroughly convinced that I was wrong. I was not supposed to exist, and I shouldn't be allowed to exist. So and what a horrible way to live, right? And so many people feel this way. And it's not just a body size. It comes with disability and race and all of these other components that have to do with bodies. But once I had that realization, then I started to research and find as much information as I could, and really learning about the history behind why we've learned to hate ourselves and debunking myths about health. And that was the slow process that slowly got me here. And it was a lot of work. It is still a lot of work, and I'm still learning.
Debunking myths, like what?
Like what were we just talking about, that fat is bad and thin is good and fat is unhealthy and thin is healthy. I think those are the biggest myths. But also, you know, the myth that, you know, you can't travel when you're fat and you can't find love when you're fat because you're unworthy and you can't have that job you dream of when you're fat. And all of those things are just false.
In fact, in Things No One Will Tell Fat Girls, your book, you find three general fat person tropes: the stupid fat person, the funny fat person, and the evil fat person. Let's start with the worst, I guess, the evil fat person. I mean, is this are we talking movie tropes here or in real life?
Oh, so when I'm talking about those three tropes, what I'm talking about is, why do we have this, like, what feels like a natural response to fat bodies that is negative? We like to laugh at them, mock at them, and hate them. Why does that happen? Why does it feel so natural? One of the reasons, there's many, is media representation. And when we see fat bodies in media, characters we create. So we are talking about animation, movies, political cartoons, all the things that we create. When we see fat bodies represented, more often than not, they are negatively portrayed and they don't have their own storyline. So, Ursula is a great example of a fat villain, Jabba the Hutt, the Penguin, any mob boss, so, you know, on and on and on. And that's how we are presented with a fat body. So when we go out into the real world and we see bodies that aren't evil, aren't stupid, and aren't there for your laugh factor, we don't really know how to process them in a very positive way. And so this becomes problematic because then we're struck with confusion or fear. When we have confusion and fear, it turns into hate. And so I'm aiming to help people put out more positive images of larger bodies, because that's going to counter the negative ones that we have.
Is it a good time in history? Is it a tough time in history to try to get this message across, given all the other ways of diversity that are being talked about in society right now? People seeking acceptance for their gender, for their race, for their religion, all those sorts of things. And here you come in there with your "let's love our bodies" part too.
Well, it's interesting because we are talking about size acceptance. And I would say actually the size acceptance market, if you will, is flooded right now, actually.
Okay, time out for a drink.
Sorry. That's right. There are so many people talking about this. And the problem with this particular market, and I am part of this problem, is that we are white, cisgender, able-bodied, plus-size, hourglassy women. And so there's not a lot of diversity in the size acceptance movement. So it's really catching on. So what I'm saying is, it's talked about more than maybe it should be, in a way, when it comes to disability, when it comes to transgender issues, when it comes to race. So I'm hoping that we can really diversify the conversation so that not just people with my voice are being heard, but others as well.
Jess Baker, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You can call her the Militant Baker. She talks about body image issues at college campuses across the country. Rogue Community College brought her in to talk this afternoon from 2 to 4 at the Jackson County Library, right next door to RCC's Riverside Campus in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, thoughts about size issues in America, welcome here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone and by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We didn't get to the other the tropes about UK.
I need to cough, and I'm embarrassed to cough on here.
Okay, we're gonna cut the microphones for just a second and let Jess get a cough in here. Okay, now we have gotten back to the microphones and just settling back in. So we'd already talked about the evil fat person, and let me do an aside here because I still haven't seen the Little Mermaid, the cartoon version. So I didn't realize that Ursula was portrayed as fat there, because I watched Once Upon a Time on TV, and which is, you know, real characters, and she's felt and sexy on that one.
Uh-huh.
So it's interesting how that changed over time.
Uh-huh.
But so the other tropes, the stupid fat person, the funny fat person. So let's talk about the stupid fat person. Has it ever cost you a job, you think? Has it ever cost you academic ranking because people look at your body and figure that there's not a good brain in there?
You know, I haven't personally experienced this because I've always been kind of, you know, it's a passable fatty for most of my life. I think I've gained a lot of weight in the last 2 years. So I think if I were to go look for a job, I would have a different experience now. But you see things all the time where there was a really large university and one of their deans, I believe, put out a tweet and it said, "Fat PhD students don't even think about applying, because if you don't have control over your body, you won't have control over your education." And so people are being discriminated against all the time. Work, of course, we see it in education, because there's this assumption that all people are inherently stupid that are fat. And it's just really, it's quite ridiculous.
Wow. My eyebrows are going to take a while to come down after that
tweet.
What college was that?
I can't remember, but I am happy to email you it later.
Yeah, I'd love to know about that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the other trope of the funny fat person, where you got to be jolly, you know?
Yeah. We love to laugh at fat people. And you see a lot of comedians playing off of that trope. And, you know, a lot of times they overlap, too. So you'll have a stupid and funny fat person. I think Homer Simpson, Peter Griffin, and Cartman. Those are, like, the three that are just, like, really intensely, perfectly, negatively fat. And they're, you know, quite popular. So,
But then I think about other movies. Shallow Hal was the one that came to mind where he loved the woman who was really large, but he didn't see her as really large. And I just wonder how that plays out for people who wear plus sizes.
Oh, my God. I haven't seen Shallow Hal, but based on that description alone, obviously, if he saw her body the way it was as a larger woman, she obviously wouldn't be deserving of his love, it sounds like. He was only able to appreciate her because he didn't see her weight. And that just plays into the whole lie that fat people can't be loved as they are. I think a lot of growing up, I was told by a well-meaning mother who was as susceptible to these lies as anyone else that I would be able to find someone who could look past my weight and love me for who I really was. And what I explain to people in general is it's not your body is not something you have to get past in order to love you. Like it is possible. And I have a partner who does, who loves my body as it is, doesn't need me to change it, and thinks I'm one of the sexiest people in the entire world. And so that does happen in real life, and it happens everywhere. We just don't see it in the media.
How did you turn your own passion and your own steps on a blog into a larger industry? It seems like you've got here.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know what to call it because it's so multifaceted, but I do body image activism, we'll call it, full time. And a lot of hard work is the answer. I got lucky as well. I happen to be a body and a person that people feel comfortable listening to. I worked in mental health for a long time, but I eventually left because I needed to write a book, and that takes so much time. So I write books, I speak, I write online, and it's just, I feel very fortunate to be able to do this because it's definitely my passion. Especially, I'm glad to be here speaking because lecturing at universities is my number one favorite thing to do.
I imagine that's where you find some real fertile ground. I mean, people who are, you know, they're still early in life and still trying to find their way and could use a little direction in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting because I used to freak out when I first started speaking because people would be so silent. But it's because they were just so overloaded with this message that we haven't even thought of, you know, for a lot of people. And then they would line up afterwards and I would see that they were listening and they did understand. It was just a lot of information. They'll tell me their stories. We'll hug. We'll cry it out sometimes. And it's really powerful.
Jess Baker talks about body image issues across the country. She'll be talking at Rogue Community College today at 2, or actually at the Medford Library next door to Rogue Community College in Medford, 2 to 4. You can join us on the exchange now at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Rebecca sent in an email. She says, overweight may not cause health issues in young people, but isn't it true that this radically changes for the worse as we age? How about heart disease, diabetes, knee replacements, breast cancer, etc.?
Yeah, so I think a really important thing to talk about is the fact that just because you're fat doesn't mean that you're unhealthy, and just because you're thin doesn't mean you're healthy, that it's individual as well. And I'm not saying that every single body in the entire world, no matter its size, is quote unquote healthy. What the problem is that it becomes public opinion on what people should be, and we connect their worth to it. So these people who do have joint problems or any other, I mean, a lot of those things are not as connected to weight as we like to think they are. But say, for example, somebody does have joint problems because of their weight, that's up to them to handle, deal with, talk to their doctor about, and not for us to judge. And I think that's where it gets really messy, is that we feel like we can go out to people on the internet specifically, because I live on the internet, and we can say, but I'm just concerned about your health. And the reality is you don't have any right to be concerned about that person's health. That person gets to be concerned about their health on their own time and deal with it the way that they can. I believe in body autonomy, and I think we all deserve the right to make decisions about our own bodies and our own health.
So essentially we should mind our own business. And I mean, is there any room for empathy, sympathy, some pathy about other people if we're concerned about their health?
Well, I think that's where it's that's how I feel about that. I just watch this all day long. I think that a lot of people are well-meaning. Fat people know they are fat. They have been bombarded since they were 2 years old with why they should diet. I know people as young as 3 and 4 that have been on diets their entire life. And diets actually make you gain weight back. So we're actually being like really counterintuitive when we do that. When it comes to empathy, sympathy, and all of the these, unless you are that person's physician or somebody very, 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 very close to them and you know that it won't be hurtful, you probably don't need to say anything. Pretty sure they've been taught their entire lives that it's not okay and they should probably fix it. So it's not going to do much good except make you feel real righteous.
All right, let's have another call here. Gaia from Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jess Baker.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
I'm actually a student at RCC.
Great.
Yeah, and I wanted to really applaud you for what you're doing for body image and for women. I'm a young woman, and I've always been healthy, but still never felt, you know, like I was in the right body. And I see that with so many of my friends, and I feel like it's such a struggle for us to even be really healthy and still feel wrong. And I just wanted to, like, applaud you and help us feel right, you know?
All right. Thanks for that, Guy. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So how does a person start to love their body if they haven't?
Well, number one, it's a lifelong journey. I do this daily it's been about 4 years now, and I still have bad body days. So I think that we have to be realistic. The important thing I think that's really easy for people to do is to change their social media feeds. So find diversity. And Facebook, Tumblr was what changed my life. And we just don't realize how easily we're conditioned to think that one standard is the best standard. And so if you were to follow body positive pages, you'd have diversity in your media feed, and slowly that will start to normalize other types of bodies. And that has more of an effect than you'd even realize.
Are we the hung-up culture? Is anybody in the world as hung up on body image and weight as Americans are?
Yes. England is just as hung up as we are, and we gave it to them. I talk a lot, and this is too much for a radio show, but I talk a lot about the history behind body hate and where it comes from, and it comes directly from U.S. economy around World War
II. We exported it.
And we exported it. And so, yeah, England picked it up. So if you see anything similar to our diet-obsessed and weight-obsessed culture, it has come from here.
All right. Jess Baker will speak today, 2 to 4, at the Jackson County Library in downtown Medford, adjacent to RCC. The RCC Diversity Programming Board brought her in. Jess Baker, thanks for coming to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.